Thank you. Thank you. Y'all haven't heard me talk yet. You might change your mind. I want to thank Pastor Mike Rye for the invitation to speak to you on this evening. Y'all are certainly a beautiful audience. Well, I wouldn't be beautiful, but you're a good look. Well, you look like a strong group of men. I want to recognize my special friend, Scott Cole. Is this talking too loud? Okay, you got it. Mr. Scott Cole, stand up, please, sir. Scott's responsible for me being here. He's just a very impressive person, and he's just a great friend. He's been a wonderful host here, and I understand he helps with this conference. So thank you, Scott, for everything you're doing. I regret that if I had known it, I might need some water. If I had known that there were ladies going to be present, I would have encouraged my wife more to come, but she was also very busy back home with my youngest child since I've been away so much campaigning. I'm running for governor of Alabama. Has nothing to do with what I'm here for. Unless any of you are from Alabama. There was a time I didn't have to do all that, but lots of times I've gone on trips without my wife, and one time I went to Alamogordo, New Mexico. I was very excited to go to Alamogordo. I'd never been there, and I was excited because it just sounded like a cool place to be. So I called my wife, and I said, I'm going to Alamogordo. She said, when? I said, April 26. She said, that's my birthday. I said, I know. Of course, I had forgotten. I know that none of you guys ever done that, and ladies, please forgive me, but we know about birthdays, something you don't forget. I recall the older couple in Alabama sitting on their front porch one time. They'd been married 60 years, and they were rocking back and forth, and the gentleman had wondered why his wife had been so ornery or cranky all day. She hadn't been friendly or looked at him. Then he remembered it was her birthday, and he hadn't bought her any flowers, no candy, no gift, no card. He hadn't even said happy birthday. So he was wondering what to do, and he thought he would make it better. Well, that's the first mistake we made. But he leaned over to her, and he said, darling, our love is tried and true. Well, now, she was older. She couldn't hear very well, and her eyes had been dimmed with time, and she didn't really want to hear him or see him anyway. So she said, huh? He said, darling, our love is tried and true. She said, what? He said, tried and true, tried and true. She said, I'm tired of you too. You know, sometimes I think that's where we are with God. That we've been blessed so much that we're just a little tired of God and think we don't need him anymore. This talk that I've got prepared tonight is not so much about prayer. Prayer is the most important. If my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven, will forgive their sin, will heal their land. But it goes further. It says, but if you turn away and forsake my statutes and my judgments, and should go and worship other gods, then will I pluck them up by the roots out of my land which I have given them. And this house which I have sanctified for my name will I cast out of my sight and make it to be a proverb and a byword down to future ages. And this house which is high shall be an astonishment to everyone that passeth by it, so that he shall say, why hath the Lord done thus unto this land and into this house? And it shall be answered, because they forsook the Lord God of their fathers. So we've got to be careful not to forsake God, not to forget him. And sometimes not sometimes, from the beginning of history, man has a tendency to do that. Eve did it in the garden. In the days of Jesus, he said, "And in them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah, which saith, by hearing they shall hear and shall not understand, and seeing they shall see and shall not perceive. For this people's heart is waxed gross, and their ears are dull of hearing, and their eyes they have closed, lest at any time they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears, and should understand with their heart and should be converted, and I should heal them." You know, that happened in the days of Isaiah. He's quoting something that was in the days of Isaiah. And then Jeremiah, the weeping prophet. "O foolish people, and without understanding, which have eyes that see not and ears that hear not, will ye not tremble at my presence? Fear ye not me? Will ye not tremble at my presence?" And Jeremiah knew what Isaiah knew, what Jesus would eventually say, that sometimes we just forget to look very deeply, forget what we can hear and understand. Just like that elderly couple. She couldn't see him, couldn't hear him, and neither one of them understood what was going on. I think that's the way it is with God. And who is it? Who is it that does this? Is it just the people? Well, of course it is the people. "The prophets prophesy falsely, and the priests bear rule by their own means, and my people love to have it so." And it goes on, Jeremiah says it. "Run ye to and fro through the streets of Jerusalem, and see now and know, and seek in the broad places thereof, if you can find a man, if there be any that executeth judgment, that seeketh the truth, and I will pardon it. Though they say the Lord liveth, surely they swear falsely. O Lord, are not thine eyes upon the truth? Thou hast stricken them, but they have not grieved. Thou hast consumed them, but they have refused to receive correction. They have made their faces harder than a rock. Therefore I said, surely these are poor, they are foolish, for they know not the way of the Lord nor the judgment of God," speaking to the people. "But I will get me to the great men, and I will speak to them, for surely they have known the way of the Lord and the judgment of their God. But these have altogether broken their yoke and burst their bonds." You know who the great men was? It's us. It's your preachers. It's your ministers. It's your civil leaders. For Jeremiah had said in the second chapter, "The priest said not, where is the Lord? They that handle the law knew me not. The pastors also transgressed against me, and the prophets prophesied by Baal and walked after things which do not profit." You see, we have a responsibility to our congregation, to our flock, if you will, but we also have a responsibility to God, to know his jurisdictional authority, his connection. We talk about forgetting God. We've got a responsibility in our society not to let government forget God. You know, that's what Nathan the prophet did to David, didn't he? David thought he had all gotten away with it. You know? And then Nathan wanted to talk about a sheep. And David, quick to judge that man that would take that poor little sheep. And then Nathan said, "You're the man." He was reminding civil government of their responsibility. And that's your responsibility. As you know, I was removed 2003 for standing up for the Ten Commandments. And a lot of people say, "Well, you know, what's this judge standing up for the Ten Commandments? He's not a religious person. That's not his venue. Why, he should obey the federal court. That's a law. We've got to be responsible for that." He could have stayed on the bench and done a lot of good. I know all the questions. Why? Why this? Why that? But I'm going to tell you some things tonight to help answer those questions. And the first thing I'm going to tell you is it's not about the Ten Commandments. It's not about a cross. It's not about a sign on the side of the road or a symbols. It's always about the knowledge of God. That's what they want. Now, you couldn't be here to see the trial. In fact, the judge said that he didn't want any recordings, audio, visual, anything of this trial, but the librarian wanted to record it over the sound and audio, or the sound and visual system we had in the court, so he wanted to make some money off the tapes, quite frankly. And he got permission from the judge to do it, and then he disseminated the tapes and made everybody promise they wouldn't show them, except me. Being a party, I got mine through the attorney, and I didn't promise anybody anything. And I show it everywhere I go, because this is the most important thing you could see in our country today, to show you what the real issue is. If we could dim the lights, please. And I'll get the gentleman back there, has been very helpful, thank you, to run the video and show you just a small couple minutes of the cross-examination and the verdict that came from the Court of the Judiciary on November 12th, 2003.
You will continue to do that without regard to what any other official says. Isn't that right?
Well, I will do the same thing this court did in starting with prayer. That's an acknowledgement of God. I would do the same thing that justices do when they place their hand on the Bible and say, so help me God. It's an acknowledgement of God. The Alabama Supreme Court opens with, God save the state and this honorable court. It's an acknowledgement of God. In my opinions, which I've written many opinions, acknowledging God as the source, a moral source of our law. I think you must.
During the trial of this matter, Chief Justice maintained his defiance, testifying that he stood by an earlier statement given by him to the Judicial Inquiry Commission, in which he stated in part, I did what I did because I upheld my oath, and that's what I did. So I have no apologies for it. I would do it again. The Chief Justice showed no signs of contrition for his actions. Because of the magnitude of the decision with regard to sanctions for the Chief Justice's violation of the canons of judicial ethics was a difficult one for this court to make. Finding no other viable alternatives, this court hereby orders that Roy S. Moore be removed from his position of Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Alabama. This court is now adjourned.
Well, now. Still on? That wasn't a bad thing. It wasn't a bad thing to remove the Chief Justice if it was God's will. We won a great victory that day when we finally told the federal government they could not stop us from acknowledging God. That's what it was about. You know, a lot of people don't know it, but all I had to do was sign a sheet of paper transferring my authority to the senior associate justice, who asked me to do so that he could move the monument. And I would keep my job. He said, you will just say it violated your conscience. You'll be a hero. But you see, that's not God's way. It wasn't God's way with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Amen. You know, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had already violated the king's orders. You remember, he said, I've heard you have done this. Well, if he really had heard he had done this, he could cut off their head right then if he wanted to. He didn't want that. He wanted submission. He said, if you hear the sound and if you bow down, all is well. But if not, you know, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego didn't hesitate. Said, we're not careful to answer you this, O king. Our God is able to deliver us, and he will deliver us. But even if not, we will not bow down to your golden idol. The king became so angry that, as you know, he threw him into the fire. Even the people that threw them in burned up. And then the king looked in and said, Didn't we just put three in there? They didn't burn. They didn't turn. They acknowledged God, as did Daniel before King Darius. And as you know, Darius didn't want to put Daniel in the lion's den. You know, the interesting thing about that story is all Daniel had to do was shut his shutters. Was he that unknowing that he left his shutters open by mistake? I'll tell you, no, Daniel knew what was going on. He wouldn't have been second in the kingdom if he didn't. But he knew that king didn't have that authority. You know, that king just ordered for 30 days. What are we ordered to do today? I wanted to tell you a little bit about this situation that you didn't know. Things that you didn't know. We talked about birthdays. I was born on February 11th, 1947. On February 10th of 1947, something happened. I can't be blamed for having my eyes closed and my ears stopped. I didn't know anything then. But the United States Supreme Court issued an opinion by an Alabama judge, name of Hugo Black, called Everson versus Board of Education, when they, for the first time in modern history, in the 1900s, used the words wall of separation between church and state. And for the past 60-something years, that phrase has been used to take prayer out of school, Bible reading out of school, to stop religious symbols, valedictorian addresses, football coach in Florida is now locked up for praying with his team, and even a federal court has said they couldn't say one nation under God in the schools in the Ninth Circuit. Have our eyes been shut to the truth of separation of church and state? You see, I'm very qualified to speak in this area. I've been to the law school. I practiced law for a number of years, civil and criminal, federal and state. I was a circuit judge for 8 years, trying cases before juries. And then I became Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court. And for the past 6 years, I've written briefs, federal court briefs in all the districts in our state, or the nation, and for the United States Supreme Court. I understand you might not have been trained in law, but you've been trained in the Bible. You think the concept of separation of church and state's in the Bible? Don't answer, please. Answer you silently. If you don't think that concept's in the Bible, you better go back and look at it very closely. Why do you think God chose the king out of the tribe of Levi, the priest out of the tribe of Levi, the family of Aaron, and the kings out of the tribe of Judah, the family of David? Why do you think 2 Chronicles 26 chapter, King Uzziah was stricken with leprosy when he tried to burn censers in the temple? And he was cast out, or he ran out after he defied the 80 priests that were there. Or you go to Numbers 16th chapter, the story of Korah. When Korah tried to defy the authority of Moses and then Aaron. And when he tried to defy the authority of Aaron, he messed up pretty good. And you know the ground swallowed he and his companions and some 250 men of renown. You see, separation of church and state never meant to separate God and government. Let me say it again. Separation of church and state never separated God and government. Let every soul be subject to the higher power, for there is no higher power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power, resisteth the ordinance of God, and shall receive in himself damnation. God ordained the church. God ordained the government. God ordained the family. And God created the individual. God's not separate from anything, ladies and gentlemen. Never has been. Never will be. But those jurisdictions are separate. Excuse me, I don't always get this, but sometimes I do. Those jurisdictions are separate. They're meant to be separate. But when we have reduced God to the church, then we're separate, see? Then God's separate from the jurisdictions. That's what the world wants you to believe. And that's what the world wants you to think. And when you think that, you're way off from Scripture. God governs this world through jurisdictional authorities. Church has no authority over how you raise your children. It can teach you. It can instruct you. But that authority is given to you. Your father or your mother can tell you to go steal or lie. But they have no authority to do that because you're under the laws of God just like they are. But there's no separation of God and state. Let me tell you what I went through, because you see, although I was not responsible for what happened on February 10th, I wasn't born yet. I was responsible from February 11th for about 30-something years as I became a lawyer. I fought for my country in Vietnam. Thought I understood the Constitution. And I went and was appointed a judge after several years of practicing law. Now, I'm going to tell you, I'm not blaming y'all. My eyes have been stopped. My eyes have been closed. My ears have been stopped. I knew a little bit about the Bible. I knew a little bit about the law. But I didn't know anything about the First Amendment of the United States Constitution. I'd run to races and political office and had lost both of them through some shenanigans on the other side. But I had given up on politics. And I was being considered for appointment to circuit judgeship. And I said, God, I've been so blessed. I was traveling in Australia. I fought full contact karate. I met my wife and got married. I've been so blessed by losing that I was kind of afraid to win. I was afraid to get this seat if it wasn't God's will. So I prayed to God that I didn't get it unless it was His will. And then I sat back and didn't do anything much to try to get it. And I was appointed. And I couldn't believe it. I wasn't the popular candidate of either party. And I went into this little courtroom and I decided I'd decorate it. And I looked for something to decorate the walls. And I wanted a big picture of George Washington or one of the presidents. I couldn't find any pictures like that. And I was home one day and I looked up on the wall and saw this little plaque of the Ten Commandments I'd carved into wood many, many years before. I said, well, I'll put that up. And immediately, my limited knowledge and the knowledge I'd been given by the University of Alabama School of Law, something's wrong with that. You can't talk about God in courts. That's religious. You'll probably get kicked out of office. But wait a minute. I had gone to all my relatives, to all my friends. I told them, God had put me here. I believe that so strongly that when I looked at that little plaque and thought I could be removed, I immediately felt the hypocrisy that I would be under if I didn't put that plaque on the wall. So I decided I'll put it up. Then God started teaching me, not any books, not any person. I started learning as God directed me about the First Amendment and God and our country. I started learning things and understanding what a hypocrisy we're living under. So I fought a battle through the state courts. I fought a battle through the federal courts. And finally, I won. I'd kept my plaque. They'd given up. The ACLU had gone home. And then the Office of Chief Justice had come open. And I felt a conviction to give up what I had and run for Chief Justice of Alabama, knowing if I lost, I had lost everything. We're getting a buzz up here, if y'all can begin. I would lose everything. But I ran, and through some miracle, all I can say is I won. And I knew that I had won because I prayed not to win if God didn't want me to acknowledge His authority at the highest level of the state. That's what I'd prayed. Nothing would have stopped me from doing that. The day came after 8 months, I was having a monument prepared for Vermont, having it carved with the Ten Commandments and statements of our founding fathers reflecting the acknowledgement of God. It was supposed to be delivered to the court about 6 o'clock p.m., and it was in August. It stays light till 9 o'clock. I was sitting in my office, and they didn't bring the monument. They had trouble loading it, I found out later. Then I started to worry. Could I do this? Could I withstand the pressure that I knew was to come? I about an hour went by. And I was about at my wit's end because the monument wasn't there, and I was worried to death that I was really going to blow this thing now. But I knew that if I didn't put up the monument, it would really be blown. So I prayed. And God took that fear and that anxiety from me. The monument was put in. The rest is history. I fought through the federal courts. Then the federal judge said, while the Chief Justice is free to keep whatever religious belief he chooses, the state may not acknowledge the sovereignty of the Judeo-Christian God and attribute to that God a religious freedom. And in that one statement, he violated every aspect of the First Amendment, every aspect of the Supreme Court case law. Do you know every constitution of every state? Ohio, Virginia, Kentucky, Florida, Texas, Pennsylvania acknowledges God, as does the Alabama Constitution. And to say the state can't acknowledge the God of its Constitution. And the First Amendment, Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, being the first part, would not exist without the God who gave you freedom of conscience, according to the Supreme Court in 1931-1946. I could go on. Biblically, legally, we must acknowledge God. Just last month, we celebrated another birthday of sorts. Not the birthday of our country. That's in July. That's when we became a nation. But there was a celebration last month on September 17th, the 222nd year of our anniversary of a new form of government. The Constitution of the United States. The same Constitution they say restricts us from acknowledging God was signed on September 17th, 1787. So I went to my calendar, printed here in the United States, and I looked at September 15th. That was Declaration of Independence of Mexico. And Wednesday, September 16th, that was Independence Day of Mexico. The day after Thursday was Friday the 18th. That was Rosh Hashanah, the beginning. And the next day, the Saturday, was Rosh Hashanah. And the next day was a Muslim holiday. And the midweek on Thursday, there was no mention of Constitution Day. There's other calendar days for the UN, Constitution of Mexico, Ramadan. Nothing about the Constitution Day. You know what's sad? We've forgotten to celebrate our Constitution. But you know what's sadder? is that we don't know the Christian nature and godly nature of that Constitution, that it would not exist without God. We've been deceived. Our eyes have been closed. Our ears have been stopped. Constitution Day was special for me. Because see, for 30 years I had been sworn to uphold the Constitution at West Point. When I entered the academy, I was sworn to uphold the Constitution. When I graduated and became a second lieutenant, and before I went to first lieutenant and eventually captain, I was sworn to uphold the Constitution. I went and risked my life for it. And I came back and became a lawyer, then a deputy district attorney, where I was sworn to uphold the Constitution, and then a judge. And all that time, I didn't even know what I'm telling you tonight. I don't blame you for not knowing it. I didn't know it. But after I tell you, you'll know. Harvard, Yale, and Princeton, great law institutions of our country, all teach that the Constitution, you've got to separate from God. That law and God have nothing in common. Yet above Langdale Hall at Harvard University are these words, non sub habeni, sed sub deo et lege. I found that out through a Reader's Digest. I said, non sub habeni, sed sub deo et lege. That's Latin for not under man, but under God and law. And so I went back to books. Henry de Bracton's work in 1256, which I believe Harvard University had translated for me. Thank them for their help. And it was written, the king, the government, must not be under man, but under God and a law. So there above Langdale Hall were the words that, not under man, but under God and law, and they don't even understand it. Constitution was written by 52, signed by 52 or 55 men, 52 of which attended Christian Orthodox churches. Madison, the chief architect of the Constitution in Federalist 37, said it was written as if by the finger of that almighty hand that preserved us during the Revolution. John Adams, the second president, said, our Constitution was made for a moral and religious people. It is wholly unsuitable for the government of any other. You see, but there's more to be understood about the Constitution. You know, the very basis of the Constitution is the fallen nature of man. That he fell from grace. That's what they thought. Listen to Madison, the chief architect. He said in Federalist 51, but what is government itself but the greatest of all reflections on human nature? If men were angels, no government would be necessary. If angels governed men, neither internal or external controls on government would be necessary. In framing a government which is to be administered by men over men, the greatest difficulty lies in this. You should first enable the government to control the governed, and thereafter, oblige it to control itself. You see, our politicians don't think like that today. And we don't understand how important it is to understand the Constitution. You know, Jefferson has been called an ungodly man. But he said in his Kentucky resolutions, if in questions of power then, speaking of the Constitution, let no more be heard of confidence in man, but bind him down from mischief by the change of the Constitution. To me, that was a very godly statement. In questions of power, then, let no more be heard of confidence in man, because you see, I'm told the middle verse in the Bible, Psalms 118:8, it's better to trust in the Lord than to put confidence in man. They knew about man and his fallen nature. 3 days before the Constitutional Convention, George Washington had been appointed as its president. And he knew there'd be a big turmoil in the Constitutional Convention because they already had the Articles of Confederation. Some of the states didn't want to change it, some did. According to an eulogy given by Gouverneur Morris, who was the most prolific writer during the Constitution, he said, "It is too probable that no plan we propose will be adopted. Perhaps another dreadful conflict is to be sustained. If to please the people we offer what we ourselves disapprove, how can we afterwards defend our work? Let us raise a standard to which the wise and the honest can repair. The event is in the hand of God." That's the first president. That was the president of the Constitutional Convention. And so they started meeting in May. By June 28th, they had done nothing. Because you see, Christians don't always get along, do we? They were fighting. 52 might have been Christians, Orthodox churches, but that didn't stop them from fighting. The big states wanted to say, pay the same taxes as the small states. Didn't seem fair, but that's what they wanted. And then the small states wanted them to pay more taxes, but they wanted to have equal representation with the big states. And the big states said, no, we should have more representation. So we're fighting. They didn't get anything done. On June 28th, according to the records of Congress that I have here, if any of you want to see it. See, in 1854, they challenged prayer at West Point in the Army and the Navy, and the House of Representatives issued a report, and in that report, they cited what I'm about to tell you. That an older man in the audience struggled to his feet. He was 81 years old, had gout in his leg, could barely stand. But when he addressed the president of the convention, everything stopped. Because everybody had great respect for this older man. His name was Benjamin Franklin. Today they tell you Benjamin Franklin was a deist. He didn't believe God had anything to do with government or the affairs of men. But listen to what the United States Congress said, according to Madison, that Benjamin Franklin said, as recorded by Madison. He said, "Mr. President, we've gone back in ancient history for models of government and examined the different forms of those republics which, having been formed by the seeds of their sown dissolution, now no longer exist. And we viewed the modern states around Europe but find none of their constitutions suitable to our circumstances. In this situation, this assembly, groping as it were in the dark for political truth and scarce able to distinguish it when presented to us, how has it happened, sir, that we have not hitherto once thought of humbly applying to the Father of Lights to illuminate our understanding?" Now he believed in James 1:17. "Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and cometh down from the Father of Lights, with whom there is no variableness," 1:17, "neither shadow of turning." He said, "In the beginning of the contest with Great Britain, we were sensible of danger. We had daily prayer in this room for the divine protection. And our prayers, sir, were heard, and they were graciously answered. All of us who were engaged in the struggle must have observed frequent instances of a superintending providence in our favor. And to that kind providence, we now owe this happy opportunity of consulting in peace on the means of establishing our future national felicity." And then he asked this question, which is so relevant today. "And have we now forgotten that powerful friend? Or do we imagine we no longer need his assistance? I have lived, sir, a long time. And the longer I live, the more convincing proofs I see of this truth, that God governs in the affairs of men. And if a sparrow cannot fall to the ground without his notice, is it probable that an empire can rise without his aid?" He knew Matthew 10:29. "Are not two sparrows sown for a farthing, and not one of them shall fall on the ground without his father?" "We've been assured, sir, in the sacred writings that except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it." We know that's from Psalms 127, verse 1. Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that what? They build it. Except the Lord keep the city. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh in vain. I firmly believe this. I also believe that without his concurring aid, we shall succeed in this political building no better than the builders of Babel. I'm sorry, that's 127:1. We shall be divided by our little partial local interest. Our projects will be confounded, and we ourselves shall become a reproach and a byword down to future ages. And what is worse, mankind may hereafter, from this unfortunate experience, despair of establishing governments by human wisdom and leave them instead to war, chance, and conquest. Now I'm going to tell you a little secret. The ACLU knows this very well. They know this very well. Because see, Franklin next asked, we should start with prayer every morning. And they didn't. Because they didn't have the money to pay the preacher. You think that's funny. But they believed it. They believed it. They went back to celebrate July 4th. They came back. They formed the Constitution. And you know what the first thing they did when they started Congress of the United States? They appointed chaplains in the House and Senate. That's why you got chaplains in the House and Senate today. Thanks to people like Benjamin Franklin. And others. Franklin was walking out of the convention and a lady stopped him and said, Mr. Franklin, what have you given us? Said, a republic, ma'am, if you can keep it. That's the question today. Spiritual battle rages. You don't have to go to Iraq or Afghanistan to fight in this war. You don't have to be old or young. Doesn't matter if you're a preacher or not a preacher. Doesn't matter if you're a lawyer or not a lawyer. Doesn't matter who you are. You're in the battle. Then shall you return and discern between the righteous and the wicked, between him that serveth God and him that serveth him not. For behold, the day cometh that shall burn as an oven, and all the proud, yea, and all that do wickedly shall be stubble. And the day that cometh shall burn them up, saith the Lord of hosts. Spiritual battle rages as it's written in Malachi. Spiritual battle rages as written in Ephesians 6:20. But unto you that fear my name shall the Son of Righteousness arise with healing in his wings. And you shall go forth and grow up as calves of the stall. And you shall tread down the wicked, for they shall be ashes under the soles of your feet. In the day that I do this, saith the Lord of hosts, remember ye the law of Moses, my servant, which I commanded in him in Horeb for all Israel with the statutes and judgments. Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of that great and dreadful day of the Lord. And he shall turn the hearts of the fathers to the children and the hearts of the children to the fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. You see, when we forget God, we're under judgment. But as it's written in Psalms 94, but God shall not cast off his people, neither will he forsake his inheritance, but judgment shall return unto righteousness, and all the upright in heart shall follow it. I wrote another poem many years ago about this battle. Today we face another war, fought not upon some distant shore, nor against a foe that you can see, but one as ruthless as can be. And you'll take your life and your children too, and say there's nothing you can do. He'll make you think that wrong is right. 'Tis but a sign to stand and fight. And though we face the wrath of hell, against those gates we shall prevail. In homes and schools across our land, it's time for Christians to take a stand. And when our work on this earth is done, when the battle is over and the victory's won, and through all the earth his praise will ring and all the heavenly angels sing, it'll be enough just to see the Son and hear him say, my child, well done. You've kept my faith so strong and true, I knew that I could count on you. Let all talk about religion and politics and government and God and separation and Yes, there are separate jurisdictions. Government's not to tell you how to do your job. But nothing stops you from telling government when they don't do theirs. Nothing stops you from acknowledging God, and nothing stops an agent of government from acknowledging God, for if they do, they violate everything that we're formed upon. We've got to forget this thing that God is limited in His power. Samuel Adams said that as much on 1 August 1776. We have restored the sovereign to whom alone all men ought to be obedient. He reigns in heaven and with a perpetuous eye beholds his subjects assuming that freedom of thought and dignity of self-direction which he bestowed upon them. From the rising to the setting sun, may his kingdom come. They never separated God from anything. None of them. In fact, Jefferson said in the Declaration, we hold these truths to be self-evident. That all men are what? And endowed by their with certain unalienable rights that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And you know what the next sentence is? That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. And that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it's the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundations on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. That's what they did then. They formed a new government. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. We men have got to stand up for our God and our form of government. And I thank you for having me tonight. I'll give it back to the pastor. May God bless you. Thank you.